I will call the July 6th Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee meeting to order. I'll take a motion to approve the June 8th regular meeting minutes.
Motion to approve Nolan. The minutes.
Second. Legislator Corcoran, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Right, unanimous. All right, we'll jump right into the resolutions. The first one is Resolution 139, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2022, enacting a drug take-back program in Ulster County. Motion to discuss? Legislator Petit, second. Legislator Corcoran. Legislator Petit, any comments?
Thank you. We just have some new information on the progress that the state is making. So I would like to ask if we could postpone this until next month.
Okay. A second on the proposal, on the postponement? Legislator Nolan? All in favor?
Aye.
Great. I will just add, just for those who don't know, the state has approved two organizations to implement the drug take back. There has been conversations back and forth about what this is exactly going to look like and when we expect to see it fully implemented. I did forward to Legislator Petit some information. I could send it to others if they're interested. The specific organization that got this grant, this not grant, but that are been hired to do this.
I'd like to receive that. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll try to remember. If not, Legislator Petit, maybe you could send to people. That would be great. I would just sort of take the bullets at the end, maybe not the whole email. I don't know if they need to read the whole email, but they can. Okay, so do we vote on that one? Yes, we did. Okay, Resolution 200, setting a public hearing on proposed local law. Oh, wait, I'm recusing myself from this. So Legislator Lopez.
All right, bear with me. I'm in the process of bringing up the resolution right now. So
you don't have it by heart?
I do not. 1 minute. It's very slow.
You could delegate if you like, Craig.
Yeah, actually, if somebody wants to read it for me, yeah. All right, so Resolution 200 then?
Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 7 of 2022, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster in relation to evictions, to be held on Tuesday, August 16th, 2022 at 7:15 p.m.
Motion to discuss. Legislator Corcoran.
Motion.
Second. Legislator Pettit. A discussion. Legislator, you should help.
Thank you. So I'm again going to ask for a postponement. I don't know if everyone on the committee is aware, but the city of Albany had their good cause eviction law struck down by the state Supreme Court in Albany last week. And ours is substantively different than theirs in many, many, many ways. But under advice of counsel, would likely, if the same logic was applied on a challenge, the similar fate would be the result. We anticipate that the city of Albany will appeal, but we haven't gotten word on that yet. And, you know, I would say, you know, in this form, it wouldn't be prudent, rather with this state of facts on the table about the Supreme Court's interpretation, it wouldn't be prudent for us to proceed with this at the county level. And I'm willing to admit that at this time until there's new information, perhaps from an appellate ruling. But until that happens, I don't see this advancing.
So we have a motion to postpone. We have a second.
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 All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Aye. All right, carried.
All right.
Chair?
Resolution number, thank you, 339, approving the execution of a contract for $1,364,900 entered into by the County for Gorick Construction Company, Department of Public Works. Motion to discuss.
I'll make a motion.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Corcoran, questions, comments, concerns? So I assume this was put out to bid. Correct?
I can take that if you want.
Chair Dennis Doyle.
Sure.
Yes, the answer was it was out to RFP, and we had
it was out to. Sorry, Dennis. It was out to bid.
I'm sorry.
It was a straight RFP.
Yeah. We had two bidders.
They were both within the budget. This was the low bidder, so we were required to award.
Okay, so just as a reminder to people, this is connected to the project of demolishing and rebuilding of the county jail. I will say, you know, my concerns 2 months ago when this had come up was that the developer had included and expected to do the demolition when they bid and got selected. However, the county then offered to pay. So I had voted against this previously because of that fact that I felt that the developer should be covering the costs. I'll vote supportively now, but I just wanted to bring up that point that I'm still disappointed of the fact that we are preemptively offering to do something that the developer had already agreed to. Any other comments? All right, all in favor of resolution 399? I'm sorry, 339?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right, it's unanimous. Resolution 340, ARPA, Food Security and Access, Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience, motion to discuss.
So moved.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Uchitel, any discussions? Chair Bartels.
Thank you. You know, I mentioned some of this in ARPA, and I know that some of the committee members from ARPA are on this committee as well. And I do have some comments specific to this project, and I haven't been able to speak to Amanda Lavelle, but I just want to, for a moment, speak to the bigger picture of ARPA projects. You know, as you may all know or not know, you know, we've committed roughly 2/3 of the funds at this point. And at the ARPA committee meeting, Legislator Nolan, who's here today, at the end of the meeting, made a presentation for an idea we hadn't heard before related to assisting local farmers. And I know that she's working on that proposal. And while this may seem off topic, you know, I just want to put it in the context of we're now at this point where we don't have a lot of money left to commit. And it really, I think, would behoove us as a body to think very critically about every project and compare one against another in terms of creating our own priorities. Because if we do this in a first come, first serve basis, and this is the portion that I'm not speaking about this project specifically, but if we do this in a first come, first serve basis, we may not actually be reflecting our priorities accurately. And while we have made substantial commitments thus far, we've actually just started, in a meaningful way to make those expenditures. As Nate, who's with us here now, you know, that a lot of these projects that we approved require a certain amount of ramp up. So I am, as one legislator, going to be advocating that we postpone all the ARPA proposals that came before the committee this month, and take at least a month or two to really think about everything that's coming. As far as this project in particular, I do have concerns about and I was not there for Amanda's presentation, but the PowerPoint was shared about the breakdown of the funds. The $350,000, roughly 2/3, goes to the studies and the front end, and 1/3 goes to what's described in the PowerPoint very minimalistically, essentially as a grant program that we'd be giving out the last third, I'm assuming, to organizations who would then deliver on what the study showed. So I would be much more supportive. I'm very supportive of spending money on food security. I've advocated for it on the floor in relation to, you know, one concept relation to CSA to membership program. And I'm open definitely to spending a portion, if not a significant portion of this fund on food security. But I'm very resistant to spending 2/3 of a proposed project on a study and only 1/3 on delivery. And also to find that that delivery is in the form of grants. Well, I mean, just to me, it's that dynamic is flipped. If not, then some. Like I would be very interested in doing, you know, having to the table some of the people that Amanda, you know, utilized in these conversations to have a conversation about the needs. You know, the legislature also just released a report that I think we would all be wise to take the time to actually read and have discussions about before we move ahead with dedicating these funds to this project. Again, I wouldn't be a no, but I would be supportive of postponing while we evaluate both this specific project, but also the larger balance of the ARP funds.
So I think it's Legislator Nolan. Did you have your hand up previously?
I did, but I would wait for Legislator Petit could go ahead.
Go ahead, Legislator.
Come back to me, that'd be great.
Thank you. The food insecurity and the food hubs throughout Ulster County are something that I'm very familiar with. I am not in favor of putting this amount of money into more work groups and more study groups. We have a crisis now. In fact, one of the pantries that I volunteer at, we now have a volunteer crisis, which means the four seniors that we've been carrying since Project Resilience, you know, may only be getting food once a month now. I'm so sorry. So I would much rather see $350,000 go into the network that we have now. We've got the Food Insecurity Collaborative, which is a collaboration between the Rondout Valley Growers Association, Family of Woodstock, and Ulster Corps. And they bring tons of fresh fruit and vegetables into the pantry system through hubs that are located throughout Ulster County and go to churches and other pantries and other organizations. I am not in favor. I don't know how else to say it. It's just surprising we will take $350,000 for a study. And just to finish off, last year I had gotten in touch with County Executive Ryan, who had an extra $80,000, I think, that was left from Project Resilience, which went to 16 pantries. It was only $80,000. And those 16 pantries were so happy to get that money. And, you know, every penny that they have, and sometimes it's just pennies per pound, to put all of this healthy food on shelves to get distributed to people in need. And just to follow up with your report, Chair Walter, if you'd like, I could forward to you from Hunger is Not an Option here in Esopus, the families and the quantity of food they distribute in just 1 month.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan?
Thank you, Chair Walter. These comments make sense. I'm just concerned about, I don't think we should put all ARPA projects on hold. I think we should be talking with the executive about ways to free up additional funding from our county budget if we need to, if we end up with projects beyond what we can fund through ARPA funds that we think are deserving. And my initial impression was that any project that would carry forward the amazing successes of Project Resilience are projects that we should support. So I came to this meeting prepared to support this resolution on that basis. I haven't actually heard a presentation, haven't seen the slides on this. So if they're in the backup materials, I just didn't think to look for it there. Maybe if there, I don't know if somebody from the executive side would like to give us a different perspective on this. I'm reluctant to slow down monies that could keep those food pantries and food hubs in business without a blip. So if that's the case, please let me know. And if it's not the case, then perhaps rethinking this to put more monies towards implementation and fewer monies towards study and administration would make sense.
Chair Bartel.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, I have had conversations with the executive department, Deputy Executive Chris Kelly, about the idea. When I talk about putting the ARPA projects that are before us this month on hold, it's partially in the context, as I, you know, I have mentioned to you, Legislator Nolan, of the fact that if we were to approve everything at its full funding this month, there wouldn't even be the money available for what you are asking for the project. Now, I'm not giving preferential treatment to your project. I'm saying that it really does highlight that we're at a place in time where we need to prioritize. And I think we need to, you know, we need to sort of take assessment of our own goals and our own priorities. Now, the comment that you just made about whether or not pausing this for a month would have an effect on our food pantries, I could tell you most assuredly it would not, because nothing in this proposal is set to go to our food pantries. This is 200 and I can't flip screens, but it's 225,000 in planning and support over 3 years, developing and facilitating a mapper and a working group and creating a plan and reports, and 125,000 in implementation fund, which would call for Ulster County organizations to apply for specific grants over the course of this 3 years. So this is not about funding, as Legislator Petit advocated for. It's not about funding our food pantries. And this is what I'm saying. I think we need to have this conversation. I certainly would want Amanda Laval involved in the conversation. I'm not, there's no doubt that she is a key player in having that conversation. I am just advocating that we wait at least a month on this while we level set, because again, this is calling for a 3-year implementation plan and then a call for projects, none of which is going to happen in the next month.
So,
and in fact, if we move all these things forward, we may not have the money for the food pantries, not from ARPA. So that's kind of my point. It's just that I think we need to have these conversations within the context of less funds available.
So I did put in the chat a link to the food insecurity study that was done. This is by one of our legislative interns. She spent a good long year doing it. Its relevance is also speaks to Legislator Petit's point. It identifies the different pantries. It shows on maps where they're located, and also that some only offer food once a week or, you know, less. And so it really, I think this reveals the gaps that exist. I think that we know that we have really excellent organizations like Cornell Cooperative, Family of Woodstock. Like, I think we have a lot of solutions that we could put money into already without any further research or study. So I agree with Legislator Petit and Chair Bartels that the concept of putting money to food insecurity, I'm 100% behind. And, you know, I'd say Legislator Nolan, but I'd rather just put the money towards those things. We know what we could do. You know, just after doing this report, I had conversations with Cornell Cooperative, with Michael Berger Family. They already are ready. They know exactly things that we could be doing right now. And I'd be thrilled to, you know, follow through on those kinds of activities rather than doing an extensive study and then having this minimal amount that's some kind of grant. Again, I think we know who's doing this work and we could support the work they're already doing. So I would definitely support. I'd also say that I believe that the ARPA committee have not completed their full process. They had many questions themselves. So I think by postponing it also would allow them to continue asking the questions they need to ask and maybe, you know, address the issues that are brought up by Chair Bartel. So I certainly would support postponing this as well. Deputy Executive Ryder.
Yeah, I mean, we submitted this resolution as written in this program prior to the legislative report coming out. We've had no opportunity to really take a look at that. I don't think that there is a big concern about delaying this for a month. So I think that's probably prudent to do at this time.
So, but I guess I would ask that maybe in that process of delay is also a thought by the executive's office. The report is now out. You're hearing from legislators this idea that we know organizations who can do this work, that maybe it even gets rethunk a little bit to be more about programming. Some very specific ones. And I'm sure we could easily spend $350,000 on improved food access to our populations in a heartbeat. So, and I know you have easily just in this room, several legislators who'd be more than happy to communicate and talk about ways that could work. Legislator Nolan?
I can even see ways in which this resolution, this proposal could link with the support for farms. I would like to have a conversation with Deputy Director Laval about that and with the executive staff. It's not clear to me which farms during the pandemic were an essential part of Project Resilience, but if there were a handful or a large handful, large collection, it might be worth prioritizing those farms for farm aid as well. So I think there's some potential, some benefits from a delay if it's not going to cause any harm.
All right. Does anyone want to make a motion to postpone? Legislator Petit, Erner, you're seconding it?
Yes.
Or do you want to say something?
I'll second the motion.
Okay. All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. I will say one last little point just to the deputy executives. One of the things the report identified that's a low-hanging fruit is that right now UCAT only allows individuals to bring one bag onto the bus. And for individuals who are using the bus for grocery shopping, that's too few. If we can make a change quicker, just let them have up to three bags, that would be terrific. Okay. Next, we have resolution 351, authorizing the Department of Planning to submit an application to the New York State Climate Smart Communities Grant Program for renewable energy equipment at Golden Hill Housing. Motion to discuss.
Motion.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Erner, any discussion? Legislator, are you second? Oh, okay. Any discussion? Legislator Petit?
Thank you. This grant application is for a housing project that is no longer under the county purview. I thought that we had transferred this over to an LDC. So I'm not sure why we're spending additional tax dollars to apply for a grant that's going to go for a private entity. And that's it. It's just a statement.
Deputy Executive Ryder.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of funding for any of these kind of projects, whether they're a private developer or not, come from taxpayer dollars, whether they're in the form of affordable housing credits or other things. This is just gives us the opportunity to apply for a grant for climate smart communities. It would help offset some of the costs on doing solar and other work that fall in line with our Green New Deal plan and requirements that were in the agreement with the developer. So this would just give us the opportunity. It would also mean maybe they don't need other type of, you know, they would need less of the other type of credits. It just adds to the funding possibilities.
Chair Bartel?
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's great to apply for the application, certainly in keeping with the Green New Deal and our objectives. But I'm just curious, why are we applying rather than Penrose? Is it because the property is currently still are? I mean, I'm just confused about the process.
It's just, we're a municipality, and so we're eligible to apply. That's all it is. A private developer is not eligible. This is, you know, part of the climate smart communities is you have to be a climate smart community, which, you know, we're basically platinum. We're the highest level of climate smart community in the state. But this is the only ability to apply. A private developer can't apply for this source of funding.
And how would the transfer of the benefit happen?
So I'm sorry if I may, Mark. The similar example I would give you is that when we did the composting operation at the Resource Recovery Agency, that was we applied for that grant, and that funding went back through and was used by UCRA to essentially establish the composting operation. And we took an environmental easement across the site to ensure that the county had an interest. And that's what we would do here. We would be looking at an environmental easement across the site.
That's a great example. Engaged.
Yeah. And we're currently engaged in that discussion with Penrose on two fronts. One is that what do we have to put the easement on? And if we have to put the easement on the equipment, it gets a bit messy versus on the land itself, which is what we did in UCRA's case. And the second piece of that is the way the grant application is written. It's public housing, public affordable housing. And so the question is, the question that we've asked the grant source and still getting answers is, does that count because of the low income housing tax credit program that's involved in this project? So we don't have answers to that. This resolution went in to make sure that we could apply. It doesn't mean that we actually will apply.
Thank you.
Sorry, do you have a follow-up? Nope. Legislator Erner?
Yeah, I want to thank Deputy Executive and the Planner for those explanations. And, you know, I just want to say I love that we're trying to get these renewable aspects to the project. I love that the state has a way that it can help us out on the county level here. I'd like a little more time to look this over. There's a lot in here with I'm wondering if there's an option for us to revisit this on the day of session. Is this committee able to postpone until session and just take a little closer look?
No.
I know that there's a deadline of July, I believe it's 26th, so we would need to approve this month in order to apply.
Right. No, Legislator Erner, we would have to have a special Health, Human Services, and Housing meeting if that would be the only way. We cannot postpone it until session. We have to make a move on it, or it can't be reviewed by Ways and Means.
Okay, so we can't propose a special meeting that or they won't be able to review it in their first meeting. I see what you're saying.
Right. Well, or it could be the second, but you're asking that everybody find time for a special meeting on this. You know, I think I will say you certainly have time to bring up concerns in Ways and Means and caucus so that they can be heard. But, okay. You know, not to say you can't propose it, but just to be thoughtful about the implications, I think. So I have okay. Legislator Nolan, then Pete, and then Chair Bartel.
Yeah, I think we've covered it. I would encourage Legislator Erner to let us move forward with this, and then we can bring the concerns up in another forum. And I would be inclined, if there is a need to have this available to pursue a motion to discharge if this didn't get out of committee. I think it's really important that we make our public affordable housing as energy smart as we can. And there are health benefits that come from having some of these types of approaches to a vulnerable population. So I'm very supportive of this and would hope that we could get all of Legislator Erner's concerns addressed.
Yeah, thank you. And just for correction, thank you, Jay. Not Ways and Means, but Public Works would be where this goes. So that would be a meeting you could attend if you want to discuss things more. And then obviously caucus. I think I have Petit next, Legislator Petit.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very excited to vote yes on this resolution if it was for Elizabeth Manor. And I'm wondering why we're not looking at our publicly owned property, especially that particular building, because it is a supportive emergency housing. And again, why we're more concerned with a private entity. You know, the scenario with the resource recovery agency, that is a public benefit corporation, and it benefits everyone in the county. So yeah, why not Elizabeth Manor?
And now I've been corrected a second time, not Public Works, Energy and Environment. That is the place you can go. I'm sure of it now. Sorry, just I wanted to make sure Legislator Erner knew what the actual next meeting is that would be talking about this. So I don't think there are any more committees left, so I think that'll be it. Okay, Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I think this is a both and situation. I do think that we should look at energy efficiency for our publicly owned buildings, but I think that withholding that from privately owned buildings will leave us short. I just today was dealing with a constituent request and spoke with Commissioner Iapochi about a federal program for housing that is privately owned, that it provides housing for people with substance use or mental illness or other vulnerabilities. These are programs that are recognizing that the private sector provides some of these services for many people. And this particular project is set up to do it in a very intelligent way. So I think we should do this and we should do those others. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. We just took possession of Elizabeth Manor very recently. And so I don't think we've started addressing all those issues with that particular building.
Chair Bartels.
Thank you. So to Legislator Erner's concern, I also just wanted to add that should we move forward with the application and should we receive the funding, it would be back before us to accept the funding. So that'll happen as well. And this requires a match. So that's something I think we'll be talking about down the line, is who's providing that match and how that works out in terms of in the arrangement with Penrose. But I think that Legislator Petit brings up I don't want to give anyone too much work at the last minute, but given the timeline, is it possible we're allowed to put in more than one application? It says that it's not possible to put in an application for Elizabeth
Manor. We don't have our RFP for architectural and design services back for that Elizabeth Manor. Like, we're not in a state for that project that we would have an application ready or even know what we're applying for at this point for that facility. There's nothing that said we can't apply next year for it. This is an annual, you know, program, but we're not there.
Okay. I would just want to
next year.
Yeah. I would want to strongly encourage that, be thinking this in this direction for all of, but basically for all of our projects, considering that we can apply for more than one. So thank you.
So I have a question, not to have to rehash my concerns about this, the project before, but when you, Deputy Executive Ryder, when you talked about us taking on the demolition of this, you said, because they're applying for grants and they need to show that the county supports them. And so by us taking on the demolition, it will show that the county is supporting them and they'll be able to get these grants. So those are different grants than this?
Those are that's all through HCR, which is affordable housing credits.
Okay.
It was definitely part of it for that. What I also said is that just the funding overall is not there, even with the 4% credits that they're getting. So when we talked about doing the demo, that makes the project possible. We talked about that as far as Silver Gardens and other projects where the county, you know, having some sort of support really made it more competitive, those projects. This one, it's less about that and actually just making sure that everything is there so that the developer moves forward with this project. Right now, they're still scrambling to make sure that all of their funding is in place so that we can move forward, and it's not there yet. This would help us get there to meet our goals.
So just to back that up or continue that, because you had also said, like, they may not get that funding and they may not be able to do it. Will, if they are not able to do it, if we get this, and maybe it's a different organization that's willing to do the math, like, will we have to lose this money if Penrose can't get the funding they need to complete the project? Or will we still have it to partner with someone else?
I'll push that over to Dennis. That I don't know.
Because we have to show that Penrose is going to match to get this one, right? It's not, it's very specifically specified as a particular organization who agreed to do it. All right. I would be useful. I'm not going to suggest holding it up, but it'd be very useful to know, since we know that it's not guaranteed that Penrose will be able to do this project, what opportunities we have to work with the state to, or Climate Smart to, retain this money should we be awarded it. Chair Bartels?
Yeah, I just, since we're on talking about it, I mean, I just had a question about the match. Because it's a municipal grant, is it, it says that a match is required, but is it required that the match be provided by the municipality, or can the municipality be reimbursed by is that allowable?
That's one of the questions that we've got out to the grant source in terms of what constitutes a match, whether the match has to be directly related to the equipment. The example I would give you is that if we're tearing down the jail, that may end up being the match.
So we may have a match built in,
and that's the questions out to the grant source now. There are a number of questions here that we're trying to answer in a dutiful manner. Both in terms of the amount of energy that's going to be saved to make sure that we have a competitive grant. There's other questions with respect to prevailing wage rates that may or may not kick in that make the grant less attractive to Penrose and others. And there's a question with respect to public housing. So there's a number of questions that we got to go through in order for us to make a decision to submit.
And may I just follow on? And that relates to the definition of project, right? Because it says 50% of the project cost. So you're saying if that is defined as the entire project, then our expenditure on the demolition could be the match. But if it's the
could be used as a match.
Green project, then it may not be. So will you also be following up that if it's the green project, whether or not we could be reimbursed for a match? Like, I don't know if there are creative ways where the county could match, because I do think, and I appreciate that you're doing the due diligence to look into this, because I do think as legislator Erner said, you know, anything to make these projects more environmentally sustainable in the long run is certainly laudable. It's what we're all aiming for. So however we can get there.
Yeah, and I would appreciate
answer is there's ongoing working documents between us with a number of questions that we have outstanding that we need to answer. And it's involving the grant source. It's involving attorneys from Penrose. It's involving our understanding of what the county wants to do and was willing to do. And some of that's being informed for what we did with UCRA with respect to those easements. So all of those things come together in terms of making a decision to apply.
So can I just ask that you also explore the possibility of disaggregating this from Penrose, if that is a way to avoid us losing this? To Legislator Ernest.
I certainly heard the question.
Yeah, and to Legislator Ernest.
I certainly heard the question.
Thank you. And to Legislator Ernest's point.
The thing I would say is generally these are awarded on a project specific basis, and they are awarded on a competitive basis. And some of that has to do with all of those things that go into the application in terms of how the project compares to other projects in terms of greenhouse gas emissions saved, et cetera, et cetera. So it would seem to me unlikely, and this is just me from experience, it would seem to me unlikely that you could sort of retain it and use it somewhere else. Could we retain it and use it for another affordable housing project in a location? That may be something that we will have to explore. And I'll get that answer for you.
No. So I guess my point is I'm not looking for it to be passed on. I'm looking for it to be retained for Golden Hill, just that it's not tied into the part one partner.
If we find another
way to match it, then if that partner does not succeed in coming through, we would still have this money for the Golden Hill project, because all the design and everything else, it has to be related to Golden Hill. I'm just asking to disaggregate it from Penrose, perhaps. And then just let me ask one more thing to Legislator Erner's point. What is the due date? When does this have to be submitted?
It's before the end of the month. I don't have the exact date on top of my head, but it's before the end of the month.
Okay. Just wanted to confirm that. Legislator Petit?
Is it possible to tighten up some of this language to make me a little more comfortable, before we vote on it, specifically to some of the points that Director Doyle had made?
Do you have a specific amendment you're requesting?
I lost the resolution. I'm trying to scroll through the with backup again. So I do not.
So you will have a chance. I mean, again, it's going in front of energy and environment. So perhaps you can think about that. Again, keep in mind, this is just for them to apply. So I'm imagining they haven't completed their proposal at all yet. So it's going to have plenty of room to get this right. But yes, I would say, if you identify some specific amendments, perhaps you can bring it up in energy and environment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so on that, any other discussion? All right, all in, where are we? All in favor of resolution 351?
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed? And any abstentions? Okay. Next, we have resolution 362, approving an execution of a contract for $50,000 for Tay Fisher's Community Cornerstone for Youth Bureau. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
Nolan, second? Second. Legislator Erner, any discussion? All right. All in favor of Resolution 362?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Unanimous. Resolution 363, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a grant application with required assurances for New York Next program with the New York State Office for the Aging. Motion to discuss. Why am I raising my hand? You should tell. Second Petit. Just eager to vote. Any discussion on this one? All right. All in favor of resolution 363?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous. 364, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $948,150 entered into the county for Catholic Charities. This is a contract amendment to extend a term. A motion to discuss. Erner, second. Corcoran,
second.
Any discussion? Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Walter. So it looked to me like the previous contract was 3 years, $1.28 million, about $430K a year. The amended amount covers part of this year, next year, basically a year, just under $1 million, $0.948. So we're up to basically double per year. So what are we doing with those doubled numbers? Are we adding another warming center, or what's going on here?
Deputy Executive, who's going? Commissioner Iapochi, or okay, go ahead.
Sure, that's exactly what we're proposing. We're seeking to establish a second warming center in Ellenville. We're also seeking to ensure that both warming center locations have fully functional generators. As a result of this past winter storms, we want to make sure that in the event that we have any kind of winter storm weather that caused the power outages that we experienced this past winter, that both of our warming center facilities would be fully operational. So those are the reasons for the increase in the amount.
Thank you. Love it.
You're welcome.
Chair Bartels.
Just a question on the generator. Does it say it in the contract? Are we requiring that they buy generators for the two, or are we, where is the generator in the contract? Like, what portion of this funding is going to the generators?
What happens with the generator is we propose the installation of the generator at the warming center sites and our code blue plan that is submitted to OTDA. And in the past, we had accomplished that at the Clinton Avenue Methodist Church where we installed a generator. So that's where the initial request is arrived at. And then the installation of the generator is coordinated between the service provider and the owner of the warming center site in compliance with local building codes to make sure that the installation is done correctly.
But I'm just confused because right now this, the full amount of this contract as it's written goes to the Schedule A, which is the scope of services, which doesn't mention the generator. So I'm just trying to understand where the funding, how the funding for the generator is contained within the funding for the scope of services.
It will be contained when we submit our code blue plan to OTDA requesting that it be permitted to be included. And then that will be added to the scope of services.
So how does, in answer to Legislator Erner's question, how does the, when you said the increase in the funding was due to the generator, but right now that's not included.
We're estimating what the cost is going to be based on what our experiences were with the installation of a generator at a prior site.
Okay, but again, this is a contract for services for the full $1,220,000, et cetera, right? That has a Schedule A. So I'm not understanding how, if it's for a future cost, how is it contained in the existing cost?
Well, this is the process that we undertook. We're not certain that we're going to be able to obtain approval, and we're not in a position to submit the plan yet, but we're in anticipation of the potential costs for doing that in the plan. That's why it's been added to the amount of the $948,150.
So if I could ask this question,
Legislator Nolan, just let me, I'll call on you in a second. So Chair Bartels, is there any more you need to say on that?
I'm still confused, okay. but I'll pause for a moment. Yeah.
Okay. Legislator Nolan.
Chair Walker. So is what this a figure in the budget, but it's not included in this contract, and that the contract, that the supplement to the contract would then fill out this budget?
Well, the way that the process works is that we're extending the contract with Catholic Charities, and in anticipation of the costs that we expect to incur under that contract, we're in the process of doing due diligence for what the anticipated costs might be for the installation of generators at the potential sites that we'll use. So we don't have that specific information yet, but it's contemplated that this is how OTDA had requested that we proceed in the past with regard to a capital improvement at a site where we're potentially going to locate a warming center. I'm not sure if that, I know that it's similar to the same approach that we've done in the past. And what happens with the Code Blue plan, we submit our plan at the probably right preceding the winter. We'll submit our 22-23 plan according to their timeline. And then they will either approve or ask us to modify our plan. And part of our plan will include expenditures that are set forth for activation sequences, for staffing, for food, for supplies, and also for the installation of generators at both sites, because we arrived at learning that the Second Iglesia Church on Elmendorf Avenue did not have a generator, and that's where we have our warming center in Kingston. So we wanted to be able to include that moving forward. So that's going to be part of our plan. And it has been an approved expenditure at past sites that we used. In terms of the services, it's not going to be specifically that we'll have to determine whether or not it's the owner of the property, Second Iglesia, that works on making arrangements for the expenditures that'll be incurred to install the generator, or whether it's going to be Catholic Charities who rents the space from them. So if we arrive at obtaining approval, we can add that to the scope of services.
Is it reasonable, Commissioner, to provide sort of a tentative internal working budget? Because clearly you have broken this down. You've done it before. You have a sense of where, how you'll be reallocating, and that perhaps that when we look at this, we would be, you know, not to hold this up at this point, but that we could then have that breakdown of, and again, it'll be working internal draft, you can throw across it, you know, whatever, to suggest like this is nothing final, but it at least shows us how this is truly broken down, potentially, even sure. If it's not, even if you might be sub-allocating that it's Catholic Charities buying the equipment versus us buying it, but it just will allow us to see how that cost is divided. I don't know if Chair Bartels, if that feels like it would be useful.
That would be really helpful.
Sure. Sure, we can do that. We've been doing these plans, I think, back to 2016, and this has been 100% reimbursed by OTDA in all the years that we've been participating in it. So we can show you last year's proposed plan, and we're in the process of continuing to work on this year's.
I think that'd be great, and I'd appreciate it also because the conversation has come up in the legislature of, are we looking to have more warming centers and more places? So the better we can see what the true costs of creating one warming center is and what goes into those costs would also help inform us on any kind of potential expansion as well. So
yeah, and I think it's important to also note that there's no guarantee that OTDA is going to approve a plan that includes another warming center. So the county may have to make the decision about whether or not it wants to allocate some of its own money to creating an additional warming center or numerous additional warming centers.
Right. All the more reason to have a tentative budget. Okay. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, I think that's very helpful. And I think also if the generator is not included in this contract at this point, that maybe should just be noted in the contract with that deduction in the amount of the contract award. And that's probably what's been done in the past. But if that could be done proactively, that would resolve this, I think, as well.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I wish I was a little more prepared to mention this, but just Commissioner Iposi mentioned what might happen or not with the additional warming center. But I've heard some talk around the public recently about warming centers in additional municipalities and how the county might help that that become a thing for whatever municipalities wish to have them. That's all.
All right. Anyone else? All right. All in favor of resolution 364?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right. It's unanimous. Resolution 364 approving the execution of a contract for $45,000, causing the aggregate plus amendment to be in excess of $50,000 for Abbott House, Department of Social Services. Motion to discuss, legislator Erner.
Sure. May I move that we block this in the next one?
Sure. There's a motion to block 365 and 366.
Second on the motion.
Nolan, all in favor of the block?
Aye.
Okay. A motion to discuss? Erner?
Second.
Second. Legislator Nolan? Okay. Discussion? All right. All in favor?
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, you have a discussion. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, please. And apologies to Commissioner Iapoche. It's going to be a similar question. I could have been a little better prepared, I suppose, but I see some numbers doubling here. Can you just explain to us what we're doing here with Abbott House and why we're taking this step? And is there more foster care that's needed and being provided? That's my question. Thank you.
It's for two reasons. The MSAR, which is the maximum state aid rates for per diems at these facilities, which are set by New York State Office of Children and Family Services, increased from $322.26 per day to $437.88 per day. And the increase is needed to pay invoices that we've received through the end of June 30th, 22. We also did have an additional youth placement at Abbott House in this current agreement. And that also resulted in an increase in the invoices we received. So that's the reason for the request to increase these two.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? All right. All in favor of resolution 365-366?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? All right. Unanimous. Resolution 367 approving and execution of the contract of $22,250, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county Bonadio and Company LLP. This is corporate compliance for Department of Health. Motion.
I'll move it.
Legislator Lopez, second. Nolan, any discussion? All in favor of 367?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? All right, unanimous. 368, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding from OASIS to support a cost of living adjustment for the Department of Health. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Second, Erner, any discussion? All right, all in favor of resolution 368?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. Let's see. Resolution 369, amending the 2022 budget to accept increased funding also from OASIS to support one-time funding to support electric repairs for residential services. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Teet, any discussion? Legislator Erner?
Yeah, just would love to understand about the electric repairs. That's it. Thank you.
Tara, Commissioner McDonald?
Sure. So we received a call from OASIS, who had been working directly with the provider, RSS. RSS contacted them with regards to an electrical issue, and I'm sorry, I don't know the particulars of the issue, but at Able House in Saugerties. And the issue was determined to be somewhat of an urgent matter based on the fact that there are residents that are currently there receiving support for their recovery with SUD issues. So OASAS had enlisted the help of the county to be able to get state funding to RSS in order to fix the issue. RSS has put out the money in order to be able to get the electrical issues taken care of. A state aid was developed and updated state aid was developed and sent to the county within days of the conversation, which I've never experienced. And then we did a resolution to be able to accept it and funnel it back to RSS to reimburse them for the cost of the repairs.
Thank you.
Legislator Petit?
Doesn't RSS own and operate that facility? So we're authorizing money to be given to them to provide for basic upkeep and operations?
So they are licensed to operate the facility, and OASAS is paying for the upkeep based on the providing them with the license to provide the service. So these are state dollars that are their pass-through dollars, which is how the updated state aid included the additional funds, and then we passed them on to RSS. They're public dollars, but they're state dollars.
I understand.
Okay, do you have any more questions?
No. I have a dilemma here because I don't, because of past experience with RSS, don't support any funding for them at all, similar to Westchester Medical. But okay, thank you for the explanation.
Okay, so all in favor of resolution 369.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? All right. Unanimous. Can I get a motion to block 370, 372, and 373? They're all state money to reflect a 5.4% COLA increase. Legislator Uchitel, second. Nolan, all in favor of the block?
Aye to the block.
Okay. A motion to discuss?
So moved.
Nolan, second. Uchitel, any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, unanimous. Thank you. Resolution 371, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept increased money from New York State Office of Mental Health for a stipend for supporting housing and funding for the New York State Legislative Ad Veterans P2P pilot program. Motion to discuss.
Move.
Second?
Second.
You should tell. Any discussion? All in favor of 371?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, unanimous. Great. Resolution 374, approving the execution of a contract for $29,521, causing the excess to be the aggregate contract plus amendment to be in excess of $50,000 for access support for the living. Contract amendment for crisis intervention services. A motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Nolan, second.
Sorry.
You should tell. Any discussion? All in favor of resolution 374?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? All right, it's unanimous. Resolution 375, approving the contract amendment for $9,067, causing the aggregate to be in excess of $50,000 for Aster Services, Children and Family, again, Department of Mental Health, increased state aid. Motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Legislator Nolan, second. Corcoran, any discussion? All in favor of resolution 375?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Right, unanimous. Resolution 376, approving a contract for $180,349 with Gateway Communities. Again, increase of state aid for programs. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. You should tell. Any discussion? All in favor of resolution 376?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Unanimous. All right, 377, approving an execution of a contract for $30,766, entered for to the county with People Projects to empower and organize the psychiatrically labeled Department of Mental Health. Again, increase for state aid, increase in state aid. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Uchitel, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Unanimous. All right. We like when the state gives us more money. It's always so nice. Resolution 378, approving the execution of a contract for 93,596, entered in the county for rehabilitation support services. This is, again, increase for state aid for community residential services. Motion to discuss.
So moved.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Erner, any discussion on this one? All right, all in favor of 378?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right. Resolution 379, approving a contract amendment for $72,856 entered in the county with Family of Woodstock. Again, increase in state aid for respite services, primary prevention, and advocacy. Motion to discuss. Legislator Uchitel, second. Legislator Erner, any discussion? All in favor of Resolution 379?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Unanimous. Resolution 380, approving the execution of a contract for 141,998 for Mental Health Association. Also increases state aid for various programs. Motion to discuss.
So moved.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Erner, any discussion? All in favor of Resolution 380?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Unanimous. Resolution 381, approving an execution for 14,037. This is entered with Family Services, Department of Mental Health. Again, increase of state aid. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Uchitel, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right. Unanimous. Resolution 382, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $7,105. This is with Health Alliance in the Mary's Avenue. This is also state aid for crisis intervention services. A motion to discuss.
Legislator Nolan. Controversial. I'll move it.
Second, Erner. Any discussion? Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Walter. So here we are with Health Alliance. I'm going to support this, but we need to talk some more about Health Alliance. And many in our county government have said we will not stop here with the 20 beds that we got back. So I'd like our committee to keep looking at how we hold Westchester Medical Center accountable, even as they are starting to respond to what the people are asking. That's all. Thank you.
Can I have a question, Deputy Executive Contreras? And I don't know if you have it handy, but it doesn't change. I'll still vote positively, but it'd be worth knowing going forward. Once our crisis stabilization center is built, with these kinds of funding, since it's hospital diversion and linkage to services, it's all very similar. Would we be able to allocate this kind of money to our own crisis stabilization center, or does it have to be a hospital, an existing hospital? And again, if you don't have it now, it'd be worth just knowing. I know there's a couple of crisis stabilization funding streams and we don't have a completed stabilization center yet, but if you could just maybe find out at some point.
Sure, we can definitely look into that.
I mean, it may have to be a hospital, but it's just worth finding out.
Yep, we'll look into it, Tara, Commissioner McDonald and I.
Great.
I don't know that it actually has to be a hospital.
Okay, great. I mean, it'd be nice if we could just use this money ourselves to do the services. Well, or the organization that we are RFP with. All right. Any other questions with 382? All in favor of Resolution 382?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous. Okay. Next, we asked the DSS Commissioner, Mike Iafosi, just for a sense of going into 2023, nothing formal, but just an idea of maybe expansions, changes or shifts that you might see? You know, one of the things that I could think of is this idea we're talking about warming centers. Is there an initiative to be having more of those? Is there, you know, just any thoughts that you, your group has had that you're thinking we would like to do more of, ideally if possible in 2023, or any shifts, like if there's any contract changes or you know, a movement from one organization to another that we might want to be aware of. So I'll just give you the floor for any kind of input.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Walter, and appreciate, you know, the opportunity to address all of the committee members on this subject matter. I had a very brief conversation with Deputy County Executive Contreras yesterday that I didn't know if my vision would be particularly riveting or compelling, but I'll do the best I can to essentially sort of share thoughts and perspectives and just ask for consideration around that. A lot of this has also arrived at as part of our management team's philosophy here at DSS in regards to our shared responsibility for the mission that we have in connection with all the programs and services that we're responsible for. So I appreciate that you use the word where we're potentially considering expansion or identifying opportunities, because that's really kind of at the heart and part of the foundation of our philosophy here, to try to always ensure that we're meeting our duties and responsibilities around mandated services and mandated programming, but also trying to identify opportunities for expansion, identify where there might be gaps, identify where there might be opportunities for collaboration with some of our existing partners who have been service providers, with some new and emerging organizations who have arrived with an interest and enthusiasm for addressing some of the subject matter areas that we're responsible for. And just in connection with that, I think that, you know, perhaps maybe the best way to do that is just by virtue of a couple of examples. One of the things that I think this committee is very concerned about, obviously, is the housing crisis that is being experienced in Ulster County, both with regard to the emergency homeless population that each and every day needs to arrive at having placements and inventory available to be safely housed, and then transitioning that emergency homeless population into permanent, supportive and transitional housing. So one of the things that we've experienced as we emerge from the pandemic is an increase in the emergency homeless population. Over most of 2020 and 2021, we were averaging around 250 to 275 unique homeless individuals, and that comprised families and individuals. And since we have been emerging out of the pandemic and there's been less isolation and more movement and the end of the eviction moratorium, we've seen that go up to about 350 to 375. So we're really experiencing some issues with regard to inventory. And I've addressed some of you at other meetings and shared our experiences and perspective, and we all know that there's other organizations that provide emergency homeless services. So it's managing this emergency homeless population right now to make sure they're getting supports and services. So we've had to place some of our families and individuals out of Ulster County at motels in other counties. And one of those locations is the Rainbow Motel in Greene County, which is in Catskill. And one thing that we recognized based on the number of placements that we had there was that they needed supports and services. So we entered into a contract recently with Ulster County Community Action to visit our clients placed at the Rainbow Motel twice a week to provide them with supports and services and engagement, making sure they had the necessities that they needed, that they had help with transportation, that they had basic food items. And we've been very pleased with the results. And it's something that was absolutely necessary, absolutely consistent with our mission. And we know that the families and individuals placed there may continue to remain there for the foreseeable future, because we all know that permanent housing inventory in Ulster County is very difficult to come by, and particularly difficult to come by for people that are lower income or who would rely on a shelter benefit. So I think that, you know, that's been part of our philosophy, our vision, seeing a gap, recognizing a need. We're going to continue to pursue arrangements with Ulster County Community Action to actually begin visiting the motels that we use in Ulster County, hopefully starting next month, once a month, to also enhance the supports and services. We're working closely in collaboration with RUPCO and Family of Woodstock to make sure that there's engagement with our emergency homeless population in these placements, to try to make sure that they're accessing every potential opportunity to find permanent housing. And, you know, that, again, part of philosophy, part of vision. In terms of, you know, our overall budgetary circumstances, you know, I do think it's important to mention the DSS budget annually comprises about one third of the Ulster County budget. So we're usually about $115 to $120 million budget. We employ about roughly one fourth of the county workforce. We have mandated responsibilities to be administering public assistance programs that include SNAP, HEAP, daycare, shelter assistance. And all of these programs have a lot of regulatory criteria and requirements that we need to make sure we're adhering to in terms of processing applications and determining eligibility. So there's an enormous responsibility there, because that's where we're able to arrive at claiming reimbursement for administering these programs accurately and efficiently. So we really take that responsibility seriously. And it's also the engagement that happens between our DSS staff and our clients who are applying for these public assistance programs, making sure that we're having the kind of conversations where screenings are happening in terms of domestic violence, human trafficking. Is there a disability? Are there employment hurdles? Is there mental health issues? Are there substance abuse issues? And this is where we're so thrilled at the restoration of mental health services in Ulster County, because we need to rely on other departments and other entities who provide mental health services, who provide substance abuse services, who provide employment services. And having a staff that's trained to be able to screen for and identify those issues with our clients and encourage them to seek additional supports where they may need them, that's very vital. I'm very encouraged that our staff is trained in all these areas of subject matter. We were able to achieve training our entire staff on diversity, equity, and inclusion this year, which is nearly 300 staff. Because they are engaging our clients on a regular basis, whether it be in person, via telephone, via email. And, you know, many of you have on occasion contacted me about constituents or individuals to support them in their efforts to arrive at getting explanations or answers with respect to their, you know, unique individual cases. So that's, you know, such a vital and important part, that relationship. On the family and children services side, clearly what we're doing there in terms of our child protective services unit, our preventive unit, our foster care unit, and our coordinated children services unit, is also incredibly challenging, incredibly stressful, crisis and trauma driven because of the nature of the reports that we receive from the state central registry that we then have to investigate. We're constantly doing everything that we can to make sure that we have engagement that's done in a trauma-informed way around safety planning for the clients who we arrive at having to make decisions about whether they might be eligible for preventive services, whether there might be imminent risk thresholds meant that require removal of children. Those children come into our foster care system. You know, again, talking about expansion and opportunities, I know MentorMe is an organization that is on a lot of your radar. And we have been involved in dialogues with the representatives of MentorMe as a potential opportunity to contract with them to become a service provider so that we can make referrals with regard to children that are getting DSS services. But it's a process. It's a process that in many regards I see reflected in the work that you all do, which starts with doing comprehensive due diligence, making sure that they're an organization that has established themselves as a legal entity, making sure that we have data to support that the programming that they're providing is evidence-based and their curriculums will provide for us to be able to get reimbursement if we refer children to their program. We also want to make sure that all of their staff and volunteers are vetted, that appropriate background checks have been done. We can't be referring children in our care and custody to an organization unless we've done comprehensive due diligence to know that our children are safe and that they're receiving services from an organization that has staff and programming that is safe and appropriate. So this is part of what we're involved doing, you know, in a very thoughtful way. And again, I've had on occasion individual conversations with some of you, talked at various meetings that we're all in attendance on, but, you know, MentorMe, Ulster County Community Action, there are examples of expansion of programming to meet needs that we're experiencing and seeing, but to also meet needs that we're experiencing and seeing in a way where we've done our due diligence, we're going to be able to capture reimbursement so that the funding that's necessary for these programs flows from the federal and state government that support our programs, and that it is benefiting the clients that we serve. You know, we talked a little bit about the evolution of code blue plans throughout New York State and warming centers and how there's been a significant amount of growth with regard to providing those kinds of facilities during the winter months. I'm always very proud to say that we had a warming center before there was the requirement to have a code blue plan. And we had started making arrangements with the Clinton Avenue Methodist Church a couple of years before that was a mandated requirement. We've been able to, and I'm very grateful to report, you know, not experience any weather-related fatalities or serious injuries since we've implemented our Code Blue plan and warming centers. And it's exciting, you know, to be on the brink of trying to expand that by creating another warming center geographically in Ellenville that can service a portion of the county that may not have been able to as easily access the warming center in Kingston. And I know Legislature Erner mentioned some other municipalities are interested in possibly joining that effort. That's where there's a little uncertainty, though. How much funding will we continue to get from OTDA in terms of having enjoyed 100% reimbursement for everything we've done so far, whether or not they deem ongoing expansion to be something that they'll approve funding for, you know, remains to be seen. But it's done in a thoughtful and, again, comprehensive way. I've always been a person, you know, that values doing research, evaluating data, making sure you know, that we're you know, being thoughtful and creative, but at the same time cautious. Over my 10 years as commissioner here, we have been subjected to reviews, surveys, and audits by county, state, and federal levels of government on a ongoing basis. I'm again so encouraged that the remarkable staff that we've had have always been able to emerge from all of those experiences, getting extremely high marks. And, you know, we haven't had any incidences in our county with regard to the programs that DSS has responsibility for that have resulted in any kind of corrective actions or issues with regard to the claiming that we've been able to submit and obtain. And again, when you're a department of this size with the amount of programming and the volume of clients and the mandated responsibilities, it does require attention to detail, attention to eligibility criteria. And sometimes that means that we have outcomes for our clients where they might not be eligible for a benefit. But even in those cases, our focus has to be on helping those people because they're still in our community and we have to have alternative options for them. That's where our collaborations with other service providers is very helpful. And that's where decision making around helping individuals and families in circumstances where there might not be eligibility for programming, but that the county can still step in and help people through a rough patch is always going to be an option. You know, so our vision continues to be centered around a philosophy that is based on being responsive to any set of circumstances that people engage us about, whether it has to do with economic circumstances, medical circumstances, behavioral circumstances, collaborating with other entities, you know, that can support services of that nature. I did invite at Deputy and Executive Contreras's recommendation our two deputy commissioners who do incredible work and are involved shoulder to shoulder with me in my position as commissioner. We have Cindy Beisel, who's our Deputy Commissioner of Administration. And we have Rita Wood, who's our Deputy Commissioner of Children and Family Services. So I haven't put anybody to sleep yet that I've noticed. So I figured if I could just give Cindy and Rita a few minutes, Chair Walter, to maybe talk a little bit about their experience.
Yeah, I'm going to just, before we do, and I definitely want to hear, Legislator Corcoran already left. I was going to give him a moment because he had to go to see if he had any questions, but he's gone. And Legislator Petit, before your time is up, is there anything you want to quickly ask? And then we can move to.
I just made my face go away. I believe that was Legislator Nolan who had a hard stop at 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it you, Legislator Nolan?
Both Legislator Corcoran and I. So just put in the chat a little brief description of ours. And I apologize. I did have another meeting to go to at this point. So appreciate it. Unless there's something anybody has for me urgently.
Okay, no, that's fine. Just wanted to give you a chance if you wanted to ask a question before you left.
Thank you so much.
So, Chair Bartels, do you want to ask a question of the commissioner before we move on?
I don't want to ask a question, but I also have to leave just for a child care issue. And so I just wanted to thank the commissioner for such a thorough presentation and to say that I'm very sorry I'm not going to hear both of you speak, but I will watch the tape. And I thank you very much for being here. I'm really sorry I have to go.
No problem. This is a long meeting. Okay. Now I'll open the floor to your deputy commissioner.
Sure. I'll have Cindy say a few words from her perspective, and she can share you know, her experiences and in terms of her responsibilities in administration with personnel. All I can tell you is that they're significant and enormous, particularly navigating the civil service system and the needs of our staff on a daily basis. So, Cindy, you know, please share with the group your experiences and thoughts. Thank you.
Sure. I oversee a lot of the economic supports, which include SNAP, Medicaid, temporary assistance, daycare, employment, as well as partially oversee payroll with fiscal. I oversee staff development, and I oversee the personnel side of it. So basically been trying to stabilize staffing here over, you know, the last few months. We've had a lot of vacancies. We lost a lot of knowledge in 2020 when there was a retirement incentive. And since that time, just kind of struggling to get a new staff, get staff trained. A lot of our positions here, including the caseworkers and the social welfare examiners, are trainee positions where you're actually a trainee for a year. So we have a lot of people that are in that position. We also have a lot of people that are in positions that didn't come off civil service list that will have to take tests to maintain their job because a lot of the exams weren't given in over during COVID. So it's been quite a challenge, you know, to meet the needs of the staff and to meet the needs of the client and get the staff trained in order to do so. And that's, I think, basically what, you know, one of the biggest struggles has been, as well as I think Commissioner Iaposti already touched on housing, which has, you know, is our biggest concern. Just tonight, I was down in TA providing support, and there were two people here for housing at 4:45. So that continues to be, you know, high on the priority and, you know, a big issue to find stabilized housing for everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. I also want to mention, just to give you some context, that Cindy had previously worked at DSS as a caseworker and then left DSS and was at the Ulster County Infirmary before it was transacted and was deputy administrator there and came back to us in 2012. So has a long career with the county providing, you know, services in a couple of different capacities. And then Rita, who will speak next, has been also a caseworker here at DSS and had been previously, before becoming deputy commissioner last year, was the director of our early intervention and preschool program. So I'll let Rita share a little bit about what's been happening and the direction we're going in children and family services.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I oversee adult services, coordinated children's services, early intervention and preschool special education services. Then children's services comprises of child protective services, preventive services, and foster care. And I have to say, over the last couple of years, there's been some federal mandates that have come down. It's called Family First. The idea is to prevent children coming into care. And if they do come into care, to make sure that they're at the lowest level of care so that they don't rise to residential facilities or congregate care. Also, it kind of goes along with Raise the Age and working with children with PINS diversion and JDs for that. New York State had a 2-year extension. It was supposed to start back in, I want to say 2019. New York State got an extension, and as of September 29th, 2021, all of New York State now follows the federal mandates of Family First. The first wave really touched and really hit our foster care unit, where we, as kids come into care, we need to look at, the lowest level care. Can they be maintained in a foster home or a therapeutic foster home? And if they can't, there are now several layers that we have to go through in order to have children remain in residential care and maximize our reimbursement. Basically, with Family First is if we can have all parties involved, including family court and the residential facilities and the state, if we all can agree that this child, due to therapeutic reasons, needs to be in a congregate level of care, we can actually receive extra federal money to help support those placements for that. The second wave of Family First, which is starting now and will continue, is to increase the preventive services that are provided at the county. So we contract with places like Youth Advocate Program, the YWCA for Family Services, and Family Services Incorporated for our family educational services and supervised visits. We're looking at Mentor Me to see how we can incorporate them into supporting our children, especially those children between the ages of 8 and 12, 13, that need support out in the community. The idea is to make sure that they don't rise to the level coming in for foster care, to maintain them in their homes as much as possible with either guardians being family members or friends of the family. We try and work with them and support them that way. The third wave is what the state calls it, will come down in the next year or two. And that is actually, they're hoping to get money from the federal government that we can filter directly to community programs. The idea is to prevent those families from even coming into our system. That's the ideal purpose of that third wave. And I'm hoping that really does take effect and that we can really expand our community services for families. Because it is very trauma-inducing for our families to come in here. We service a lot of families that have themselves been involved in child protective services, foster care, preventive services. And this year, Tara, as part of our group of committee and community members, it's a learning process for all of us to rethink how we work with these families and how these children do not come into care and what we can provide before they come into care. So we're all learning. And for our families especially, they have ideas of what it was in the past, of what they may have experienced, and it's hard for them to grasp some of these changes. So we're working slowly but surely on that end of it with them.
Thank you.
Do a lot with housing. TA is involved. We do a lot of support for them as well as they provide support for our families. And again, it's substance abuse, mental health issues. We're dealing with all that stuff on a daily basis.
Great. Thank you. So I personally have questions, but I'm not going to ask them tonight because it's getting very late. The only thing I want to say, then I'll see if any legislators is really just this appreciation for the work that you do. This is such a challenging population. I'm glad to hear that you're doing diversity, equity, inclusion work with them, but I hope you're also doing programs for mental health for your employees, because it's such, you know, difficult, sad, challenging work that it has to be challenging for all of your, you know, for one quarter of our county workforce, who are just, it's hard to have a really light, easy day in your world. And so I do hope that you do programming, mental health programming for your own staff as well. And just extend my appreciation. And I'll save my questions maybe when, you know, for another meeting, or write them up. But any other legislators, do you have anything in particular pressing that you want to kind of ask about now? Legislator Petit.
Just because the Mentor Me has come up several times in the conversation, and of course they're growing in leaps and bounds, and they've been trying to get funding for a van so that the director's not making 20 trips with her Prius. Is this a organization that you may be actually writing into your budget since you're working so closely with them now? And it is budget time.
Yes, we are looking at a contract opportunity with Mentor Me. How that would be arrived at, Legislator Pettit, is that if we arrive at being able to make a referral to Mentor Me for a child who's getting our services, each child in our care and custody is a line item in our budget. So the services that would be received for that child by MentorMe, there would be compensation for that. So that would begin to help them as an organization generate funding. So we wouldn't necessarily be able to enter into a contract with them so they have funding to buy a van, but we would be able to start to provide them with funding that they could use for the needs that their organization has. So that's how that would be arrived at. You're welcome.
Anyone else?
I have one final thought, and I just wanted to say that I have been attending meetings on a regular basis, you know, for the last couple of years and this year. And I want to say that all of us here at DSS are so incredibly thankful and grateful for the restoration of mental health programming in Ulster County, which, you know, has been arrived at and is now going to be under the guidance of Tara McDonald. With the support of Dr. Smith. I mean, that kind of collaboration and being able to make referrals within our county for people who are on our population and caseload who are in dire need of mental health services is so vital. Same can be said for substance abuse services. You know, I've been privy to your conversations on many resolutions that are arrived at for other departments. And I listened intently and was so thrilled about, you know, some of the programming, particularly with the school systems, where we see a lot of referrals for children that are not attending school. And, you know, this kind of collaboration and programming is so important and will benefit the clients that we're trying to support. So the assistance that is going to be available to them, And just the focus and due diligence that you do as a committee with regard to who should be providing the services. What is their relationship to our county? What is their commitment to our county? Can we do something in-house? Should we contract out for it? It's the same kind of analysis we go through on a regular basis. So I appreciate the effort that all of you expend, you know, in connection with making those decisions on behalf of our department and the other departments that you oversee, because we are very encouraged by, again, you know, what's unfolding around a lot of these areas of subject matter that have to do with housing, mental health, substance abuse, and it's going to certainly, we believe, positively impact our clients who we see that really, you know, need these supports and services. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Oh, Legislator Erner.
Yeah, and I don't expect us to be able to really get too much into this, but I just want to put out there, is there a vision where the Department of Social Services is we talk about it being for folks in need, all kinds of needs that we serve when you need it, you know, an emergency or other kinds of basis, you know. But is there a sense in which a vision perhaps where DSS could really be for everybody?
You know, I believe that there can be, but we also need collaboration with other areas of professional expertise. You know, to the degree that we can have a client arrive here who presents emergency homeless and arrange for an assessment and screening and determine that there's substance abuse issues, we can connect that individual to treatment. We can't do the treatment here, Legislature Erner. We have that opportunity of engagement. We can provide support. We can arrange for housing. We can make the referral for substance abuse treatment. We feel that hopefully that gets somebody stabilized and on a path that will eventually give them the opportunity to have their other essential needs met. I do think we're doing that. I think if we have somebody arrive here who discloses that they're an intimate partner violence scenario, we can arrange for them to be sheltered. we can arrange for other steps to be taken where they might be economically exploited. We have somebody come in that needs help finding work. We can refer them to employment and training. I do think we do everything we can for everyone that comes in within the context of what our programming offers, but it's also going to have to include referrals to other areas of, you know, professional expertise. So that's basically how I would respond to that. I hope it's informative and helpful.
Anyone else? All right. It's been a long night. A couple of the housing work groups minutes have been posted. I owe Legislator Lopez my notes. I do have them, but I have to type them up. I'll get that to you early next week. Unless there's something pressing from any of the work groups that you want to bring up, anyone have anything pressing they want to bring up from their work groups? So just encourage you to share whatever kinds of notes you have so that we can be informed. It's challenging. We always have so many resolutions to go through, so it's hard to have these conversations, but I definitely, you know, want to find an opportunity in a way that we could be sharing what's going on in the working group so that as it moves along, we'll see how August looks. But in the meantime, you know, any kind of information that you need to share back and forth about the progress that you've been having, or questions or issues, I think eventually we're going to need to bring everybody back together, but I don't think it's time yet. So keep having those meetings. With that, I will take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you all. Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend.
Thanks, everyone.